Welcome to the Child Free Wealth Podcast, hosted by Bree and Dr. J, certified financial planner. Here we discuss life and finances as it relates to being child free. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Please consult your advisor before implementing any ideas heard on this podcast.
Hey, Child Free Wealth listeners, we are back in the book club and we're taking a look at a book that actually has been around for quite a while, and it was redone and relaunched, and it's awesome. And it's Your Money, Your Life by Vicki Robin and Joe Dominguez. Now, Joe actually passed away in between the episodes or in between the different editions of the book, and she did some updates across time, and some of it still has a little bit of kind of feels a little old, but that's okay because a lot of the principles work. Bree, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed this book. I thought it was super good steps in it. It was fun to listen to. I listened to this one in audiobook, and her voice is also very soothing, just if you're going to listen to the audiobook version of it. But overall, it was good content. I liked it, and I listened to the last half of it with my wife, and she really liked it too.
Nice. You know, I'm currently working on the launch for my next book, and we're focusing on the concept of simplifying your finances so you can have an amazing life. And really, Vicki does talk a lot about kind of like the amazing life part. You know, kind of what is your life? What do you want your life to look like? My challenge on it as I was going through is like, she's not on the simplifying finance part. Like, I mean, she's like, you have a chart for this, you have a math for this, you like everything down to the hour. And I get it. But at some point I'm like, is it worth the work? Did you get that feeling, or is that, am I just off?
I think it depends on where you're at in your journey. I think if you're very much starting, then yes, you do need to take time to sit down and look at these things and write them out and get a realistic viewpoint. Because if you're just starting, you're not really going to know. But I think a lot of it too, I typically use analogy, finances the same as fitness. Like, you track those things over the years so you can see how far you've come. And yes, there are a lot of charts, but I think you don't have to use every chart. You can use a few different ones or like one or two.
Yeah. And by the way, if you're one of those math nerds that loves doing Excel sheets, do it. Like, seriously, like, you'll love like the stuff she's got in there. She got like down to the minute and how much, you know, and I'll do some exercise with folks and say like, okay, what's your hourly rate and how much are you spending on dining out, for example? And she talks about ways to do that. I just wonder if it gets like the point of diminishing returns. At some point you're like, you know, if we go back to fitness example, really, does that one extra calorie matter? You know, like, it's like how close do you get? And some people are down there. Like, you know, if we use the fitness example, people have got all the monitors, the Fitbits and other things, and like tracking the minutes of their sleep. Cool. If that's what gets you excited, awesome. Now what gets me excited, and that's where I go. But before we get there, it's really interesting. She, when she wrote the first edition of this, was talking about a lot of things around consumerism. I also listened to the audiobook. When I listened to it, I was like, oh, she was kind of ahead of her time in talking about it. And she's talking about the history and how we go from like, oh, we had enough just by like having enough to live and have enough to exist, to we need to buy more and more and more stuff. And we'll talk about it as the hedonic treadmill of like, you just need to buy more and earn more, buy more, spend more. Like, it's just this constant consumer. It was really interesting. Her discussion to me, or it was interesting to me, her discussion around being a citizen versus being a consumer. When did we change from being people to being consumers? And Bree, she kind of throws it at the marketing folks and says it's kind of your fault because that's where your background was. I mean, did you get hit there?
No, I often joke that I'm in finance now to kind of like confess my sins of the marketing past, because it is very much in marketing you learn how to make people spend money. And it is every quarter, like the more sales you make, the more money you make and you get commissions and all these things. So it is very, very numbers and consumer driven. And that is kind of why I got away from marketing, was because I don't necessarily believe in those things and don't really like those things. And not all marketing is bad. This podcast is marketing, but there's just something about always wanting to spend more and the keeping up with the Joneses that I don't really like and don't really resonate with. And so I think her criticisms of marketing was totally fair.
Yeah. And I just come back from a convention and I had an 8-hour drive each way. So I was listening to this book there and I'm going to another podcast and my ADD was acting up. I was back and forth between things while I was listening to this, because I do a chapter here. And then I flipped over to a podcast and this is actually Grant Cardone, which is never one that you should listen to, but like, it's really about 10Xing. And the person speaking there was like, I'm planning my mansion. I have a 25,000 square foot mansion, and I've got like a picture of the private jet I want and like which model number it is. And I'm talking to people about like fuel. I'm like, what point do you just go, I have enough crap, like stuff, and I'm happy? And that's a hard point, because like, there is this part of the world that's like, if I have more stuff, I'm going to be happier, which, by the way, Vicky really goes into like, nope, data says no. Like, as once you get over rent and ramen, the is it really going to help your life doesn't get there. But yet there's so much other information out there saying you must consume, you must grow. You know, I like Remit's work, but he talks about your rich life. And I'm like, well, rich life usually implies buying stuff. I'm using the word amazing life because amazing doesn't have to mean you have to buy stuff. And Vicky probably is kind of more on that side. But I'm like, I'm debating this question about like, this is what Vicky's trying to get you to get to, is like, why do we bother earning money? And my wife and I were having this discussion recently, and we were talking about careers, and she's moved from academia to another career. Her aha now is like, she could just enjoy her job. She's like, is that possible? I don't have to go up the ladder. I'll have to. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, why do people keep like going up the ladder and trying to earn more? I'm like, because they got to buy more stuff. And she's like, is that really it? Like, is that all that's to life? Like, we're buying more and earning more? And I'm like, kinda, until you stop. You with me, Bree?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we're always taught, you know, you buy your starter house and then you buy a bigger house and then you buy this and this and this. And like, you add all these things. And there's a point where those things aren't going to make you happy. They're just exist. And I mean, I grew up with the big house, which I didn't think was big at the time. And now I'm like, yeah, I did grow up in a big house and like all the toys, all those things. Like, and yes, I had a very happy life, but it wasn't because of those things. It was because of my family and spending time with them. It wasn't the stuff that we had.
Yeah. And Vicky goes into like, how do you measure, you know, how much time and effort you put into it? What are you getting out of it? You know, that's where I'm like, I don't need to do that much math, but if that works for you, that's fine. I'm more saying, okay, why are we doing this stuff? Like, why do you get up in the morning and do what you do? And I had the conversation with a couple of folks this weekend about, okay, you're good. You know, you're fine financially. And by the way, there's two phases of life, you know, like when you're not fine and when you are. So let's talk about, this book's really about like, you're in a decent place. Once you're fine, it's like, okay, cool. What do you want to be when you grow up? And everybody's like, nobody asks me that question. I don't know. You know, I had somebody who said, my number one goal is I'd like to spend more quality time with my spouse. Cool. So how about you cut back on work and do that? And they're like, can I do that? I'm like, yeah, you're fine. Like, it would stop your savings rate, but you could work 25% less and spend all of that time with your spouse. And their brain was just like, poof, like, no, can I do that? Like, really? And that's what Vicky's getting into, is like, how is your time going into what you want out of your life? And it's just unprogramming this stuff that's like pushed into our head.
I think part of that too is, we're not necessarily taught that it's okay to just want to spend time with other people. We're taught that if we're going to do something or whatever we want, has to be this big grandiose thing, where it really doesn't have to be. It can just be hanging out with your spouse or your friends or anything like that, or even your pets, like, or by yourself. It doesn't have to be all of these things that are bright and shiny.
Yep. And, you know, my wife and I, we will often go to like flea markets or antique shows, things like that. We'll spend half a day walking through it. We'll spend $20 on some drinks and snacks and maybe buy, you know, actually we bought our dog an antler the other day. It was like $40, but you know,
the big elk,
he loves them.
An antler?
But like, oh no, the big giant antlers. For the dog. Our dog's a mastiff. So like, we need like the giant, because otherwise like they're gone in like 20 minutes.
That's fair.
But like, okay, so we spent $60 for the entire day.
Yeah.
And we hang out. I don't really love crowds, so I'll bring kind of my headphones and I'll be listening to something, and we'll hang out. We got to do our thing. $60. We're not really buying anything. We're looking around kind of like, oh, that's cool. They're doing this. Like, and that's just quality time. It doesn't have to be, oh, we got to fly to Paris for the weekend. Like, there's a place for flying to Paris for the weekend, but there's it's a question of what really brings you joy and putting more time and effort into that. I call it Marie Kondoing your life, getting rid of the things that don't bring you joy and doing more of the things that do. And that's kind of where Vicky's headed. Like, you know, that's why I give her credit. She's ahead of her time. You know, she was talking about minimalism before, like, the minimalism challenges existed and a few other things. Like, I'm kind of a history nerd a little, and I'll look at financial history and I'm like, they had it. Like, this was there, you know, like decades and decades ago. And what we're finding is a lot of like the great concepts for finance work. Like, it doesn't matter the technology changed or anything like that. You know, she did some updates in a book for this, the last edition, and talk about some of the technology, but she has a 9-step program and I'm good with it. Like, if you follow it, it's probably going to get you to focus on it. Bree, what'd you kind of, when you look at the 9 steps, what jumped out at you?
Yeah. So the very first step, make peace with your past, I thought was super interesting. And in that, she tells you to look at your lifetime earnings. And so my wife and I both went on Social Security website and looked at our lifetime earnings. And then she wanted you to compare it to your net worth and like, what do you have to show for it? I didn't really like that necessarily because, I learned that I've been earning income since I was 12, which makes sense if I think about it now. But like, that's a long time, it feels like.
Hold on. That's because you've been working farm stuff. You can work since 12. Okay. Not everybody.
No, it wasn't farm stuff though. It was like swimming lessons. I would teach those for our swim club, other things.
Oh, all right.
And work at the pool. Yeah.
They allow things in South Dakota and other states. You know, you can't work at 12. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I took driver's ed at 13 and had a car at 14. So like, it's young.
Yeah, okay. That's different. Okay. Like, you know, some states are now like 17 or 18, but all right.
Yeah. Me just rolling in my tiny car at like 13 years old. That's terrifying to think about now.
I'm scared hearing it, but like,
yeah.
All right.
But I think comparing it to your net worth isn't necessarily the best option because there are other things in life that you could have spent money on that aren't reflected in your net worth that could have added to your life. And I know there are things that I've spent on over the past years that really have made a positive impact in my life, but that is not reflected in my net worth. So I think it's interesting to look at how much you've earned throughout your life and also see like how long you've been earning money. But don't get caught up in comparing that to your net worth.
One of the things on net worth, I like it as a measure for progress, but you need to not make it a measure of your self-worth. And that's where like we get some mixing where it's like, oh, well, you know, we'll often do this for clients. We'll add up all their stuff. And I'm like, oh, so you have a $1.2 million net worth. They're like, well, I mean, it's in the house. That doesn't count. And this doesn't count. And this. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, you're fine financially. You're doing well. They're like, well, not well enough because my cousin, she's got a $2 million net worth. I'm like, your cousin's not better than you are because they have a $2 million net worth. They're not better because, you know, I had a discussion the other day, like, well, I'm going to work as a teacher. I'm not going to be paid that well. But so-and-so is working a lawyer. I'm like, what you're paid does not determine your worth. It's just what they're willing to give you for money. And I like net worth for like, kind of like, have I done the steps I want to towards my goal? Not necessarily like, am I at the right spot? I think the other one I run into with net worth is please, please, please don't Google what your net worth should be by certain ages. Okay. There's all these rules and none of them fit our child-free folks. If it says by 40, you have to have X, like says who? Based on what financial plan? And it's based on averages. So for a while, they were showing net worth averages. By the way, median is a better measure. But like for millennials, Zuckerberg is in that average. Well, his net worth is going to completely mess up everybody else's. I like it as your own personal measure. Like, am I doing a directional? Don't measure against others. Does that make sense, Bree?
Oh, yeah. I don't think that you should be measuring against others because, you know, somebody asked me recently in an interview I did was what those numbers are. And I said, there aren't really good numbers and I wouldn't go looking for them because there's so many different factors in there that they can just make you feel awful. And they're like, wow, you know, I didn't think about that. It's true though.
I did a press article. Somebody asked like, what's the key numbers you should have as a millennial? Why millennials? I don't know. They love doing financial articles based on generation. And I said, the only number I care about is zero. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you know, ideally if you're a millennial and when you get through that phase, you have zero debt, you're doing well. And they're like, it's actually a measure that would make sense. Net worth Well, it depends on your life, but zero debt is kind of like, do I have the foundations set? You know, am I able to catch up on it? And I'm like, okay. So like, there are some numbers, I don't know. I'm kind of like, okay, this is a good point to point at, but like most of them don't fit. Actually, first step, making steps of your past. So what else did you like?
Step number four was asking yourself three questions. The first question is, did I receive fulfillment, satisfaction, and value in proportion to life energy spent? I thought that was a really good question. Life energy. She talks a lot about that in the book. And then second question, is this expensive life energy aligned with my values and purpose? And then the third question, how might this change if I didn't have to work for money? Those are kind of similar, like George Kinder questions. They're not exactly the same, but they're in that like ballpark of questions. So I really like that and getting a good measure of things outside of your net worth. And then in there, she always also has an exercise to go through your expenses and mark them with a plus, minus, or a zero, meaning you want to spend more, you want to spend less, or you want to keep spending where you're at. And I thought that was really good to see if your spending is aligned with what you say, because sometimes we can be spending on things that aren't necessarily adding value to our life and they don't match our values. And it's easy to do that without necessarily thinking about it. But I would add one question is, what needs to change now at the end of that? And that's one question we often use along with the George Kinder question is, what needs to change?
Yeah, I mean, I'm liking this directionally. 95% of what's in the book, I'm on board. Like, I just like different tools. Like, you know, and it's not that we're getting to different solutions, just different ways of phrasing it or structuring it. I did an exercise this weekend with a crowd and said, hey, you have X amount of cognitive load you can handle. It, you know, your brain can only handle so much. Some of our brains handle more, some less. Sometimes during life, we can, you know, have more space or not. What percentage are you spending on your finances and your work? And what percentage are you spending on your amazing life? And there's a kind of like this balancing act. And I like that kind of like putting a measure to it. The problem is, how do I measure what I really value? And that's hard. I did something exercise like this with a client. I had them list their top goals in life, what matters to them. And I think it was five items in this example. I said, okay, what percentage of your time should you be spending on each of these? And they gave kind of things. I said, okay, then what percentage of your discretionary income should you be spending on all? And by the way, that should be the same amount as your time. You know, if your number one thing, you know, so you're Brie and you want to do hiking and you want to do outside, you might actually not spend a huge amount of money on it. But when I say what percentage of your money you should be spent on it, it might be like, hey, I'm going to take a day off of work and do it, which might have a monetary or work balance, but I can actually go spend more time doing what matters. You know, it doesn't always have to be spending dollars. It could be spending time. It could be spending resources, you know, your capital, you know, whatever your time, money, your health, other things you're putting into it. And is that going to your values? I had them do this exercise. And what we realized was, their money wasn't going where they wanted it to. It's like, well, all right, let's shift that. And I'm not saying it has to stay that way, like for years, like for this year or this season of life. And I'm more and more thinking about things in seasons of life. For this period of time, these are my values. And it's okay if some of those change because life changes. I mean, Brie, do you think your time, money, and efforts are going towards your values now?
I think I've always kind of been very conscious of that because I was in the marketing space. Like, I know spending just to spend isn't great. I tend to be very conscious of spending and making sure it's going to what I want. I also make it very easy and just have my paycheck is like our fund money and goal money. And it goes into an account that's not with the rest of our spending stuff. It's building over there for us to do the things that we want to do. And I think that can be a really easy way to like put part of your paycheck away in a specific account just for the goals that you have, because then you don't see it in your regular spending account every month. And that can be a good way to make sure your spending is aligned too.
Yeah, I actually did a little reflection on this weekend. The conference I was at, it was actually the Childless Collective Summit, and their last day was on the beach. And I love the water, the beach, the boating, all that. And I had sold my boat actually recently and moved to Tennessee. And a lot of my time and effort, I mean, most of it, I mean, way a lot of my time is right now in my new book coming out, Childhood Wealth, and where the company's going, the growth. I'm like, well, my time, money, and effort are not really going to things I enjoy today. But am I okay with that for a season? to then have more at the end. And my reflection was, yeah, I think I'm good. I'm going to check back at the end of the year and see if that's still the same answer, or, you know, 6 or 12 months. And it doesn't always have to be that I have that perfect alignment this year, this season, this time, because I can look at it in the bigger scale and say, okay, for example, we're doing a lot of work with the company on, you know, over the next 5 years, here's our growth, here's where we want to go. Cool. I can do a 5-year sprint. That way, at the end of that, I can be more aligned to it. The thing is to draw a line in the sand and say, but I must make that shift at some point. You know, so I have a personal, when I hit X number, it's about 10 million in net worth, I need to cut back on work and go enjoy that, because over that, I'm not going to help. But you can do this in different ways. It doesn't have to be like this week, I've got 100% balance, you know, or this month. I was talking to somebody else who was going through a lot of different things with their family and providing support and providing for their parents, their siblings. Right now, all of their time and effort is into supporting their family. They're really sacrificing themselves. Okay, well, what's the border? You know, what's the boundary? What's the, hey, at some point I need to find some time for myself and make sure my money, my time and effort are going to, that's really hard, you know, but you need to have some type of plan that says, this is where I want this life energy put into. And we need to get rid of the head trash that says, well, that's selfish to do or whatever else. Like, you'll burn out if you're not putting it towards your values and purpose. All right. And by the way, everybody, the reality check is Bree's probably going to, after this, give me hell because she knows that I'm trying to work on my own balance. Well, you need to be working on it. Like, oh, I can hear her already. She's going to come at me. But like, it's this, we all have different perspectives on it, but we need to find the balance. What else did you get take out of the book?
Yeah. And then I think the step that resonated with me the most is step number 7, redefine work. So it's really talking about valuing your time and energy and making sure your time and energy is going towards something that we enjoy. And work doesn't always have to be paid, and that's okay. It can be volunteer work or starting something, like starting a foundation, if that's something you're really interested in, or whatever that is to you. It doesn't have to just be doing a, like, you don't have to stay stuck in a job you hate. And that's one of our episodes is, I'll make you quit your job, is because oftentimes people will feel like they're stuck in something that they don't enjoy. And it's okay to change that. You can enjoy what you do. Like, I honestly enjoy work every day. People ask me that all the time. And I'm like, I do. I can tell you one day where I had a day that I really wasn't enjoying it. And that was not on anybody here. It was just the circumstances of that day. But otherwise, I really enjoy what I do every day. And finding that, whatever it is, can be a good way to improve your life overall.
Yeah, I'm with you. And somebody listening to this is going to be like, yeah, I can never find a job that I'm going to enjoy. And all, and I get it. We're currently interviewing for associate planners. And I just had some meetings and interviews with people. And I said, look, if you work for us, I'm going to be honest, we don't pay the best out of financial planners. Like, you can go make more money elsewhere selling products. That's not what we do. But we're really into this work-life balance, or work, enjoying your job and always learning and growing and providing a supportive team and, you know, not overdoing it. You know, like, our general rule is kind of like 40 hours plus or minus 10%. If you're working more than 44 hours, you probably messed up somewhere and you need to stop. Like, you have control over your calendar. We have unlimited PTO. And if you're just saying, well, I just got to earn more money, well, sure, you're going to make sacrifices in what you're doing for work. And what happens is we kind of like, oh, well, I always have to earn more money. My last job made X, I got to make X plus. Or you could take a pay cut and enjoy what you're doing. This is where we talk about the garden of the rose, the file approach, other things. And so many people, when I pull it apart, I'm like, do you enjoy what you're doing? No. Then why are you doing it? They're like, because I have to. Why? Well, because I have, and I'm like, we start pulling apart, and what we find out is they just get stuck on this consumerism. Like, goes back to the beginning of the book of like, what, bigger house, what? I'm like, so sell a house, go do something you enjoy. And they're like, I can't do that. Yeah, you can. Nobody's going to yell at you because you downsize. Or, you know, I had somebody who was like, well, I want to put all these like repairs in my house and redo this. I'm like, or you can just sell the house and go rent somewhere and just enjoy your life. And they're like, but you're not supposed to do that. I'm like, says who? Like, you know, like, and I had somebody else I was talking to who is trying to find her purpose in life. And her purpose, really, what she truly enjoys is animal charities, rescues, other things. I'm like, great. So how do we make sure all your time, money, and effort is going there? And she's like, well, but my job pays a lot of money. I'm like, cool. Like, that's good. How do we make sure that's going towards what matters to you? And when you pull this apart with people, it's just the head trash again of like, you must do X. You know, this is the your money or your life. Literally, the concept of the book is like, which is more important to you? And unfortunately, the money tends to be it. And if you're dying with zero, like, some of this really makes no sense because you're going to give it to your estate, which is not a priority. This is one of those books, like, if I rewrote it as a child-free book, I would probably be a little harsher on, you know, enjoying your life and getting further and further away from money. But like 80% of it would apply. Like, you know, it would fit. That's one of the nice ones I see. So would you score this? Like, thumbs up, thumbs down, 14 stars. What'd you end up giving it?
I gave this one a 5 out of 5. And I thought overall it was a fantastic book. Probably one of the ones that was more enjoyable because it wasn't so numbers focused and did talk a lot more about life.
That's fair. And I actually took it as the other way. I'm saying, like, I loved it, but I didn't like some of like the charts and the things she did want to do on numbers. Just go for the life stuff. Let's go. Still recommend it. But it's like, you know, it's funny. We're reading the same book and slightly different perspectives on it. I think for our audience who's been listening to a lot of stuff that we're talking about with life and the shifts and the stuff more than money, it'll ring true. I will encourage you, if you read it or listen to it, kind of pull apart, like, what if this is timeless advice? Because a lot of this is, you know, decades old originally where it started. And it's so timeless. I'm saying, if it's timeless, that's probably something I should follow. Yeah, like, oh, well, here's a new fancy thing that I can do. I don't follow a lot of those. But if there's something like just good principles, which I think this is, it is. All right, Bree. So for those following us and want to join us for the next book, what are we doing?
We are going to be reading Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending by Elizabeth Dunn and Dr. Michael Norton.
Happy Money. All right. I don't know this one. Where'd you like come up with this one?
I mean, I looked at our list of books that we had talked about reviewing in the future, and I just picked one. I picked one I felt like I could reasonably read in the next month with everything else going on.
By the way, that's a perfectly valid answer. It's like, you know, like, at some point, we just have to pick where you're going. I will tell you, listeners, if you have a book that you're like, hey, this is where you need to go, send it in. You know, we're always looking for ones to challenge us and work through. We are trying intentionally to get a wide variety of authors and backgrounds and structures and ideas. Please put it in the comments, share what you want. Also, go read Your Money, Your Life and tell us if we're off. Maybe we missed the mark, but I have a feeling you'll enjoy it.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please consider leaving a rating or review. We'd love to keep the conversation going. Follow Child Free Wealth on social media or email us at podcast@childfreewealth.com. If you're interested in working together, learn more by visiting our website, www.childfreewealth.com. We'll see you next time.